Coming up on TMS, I made a kid have a very bad day.
Twitter is confusing.
Robots are getting married.
Sarah O'Connor starts the robot revolution.
Justice League goes dark.
Maria is leaving the street.
Therapy Thursday and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Hey, I always cry when I'm hungry.
What goes great with happiness?
Something sitting on the Ritz.
Everything will taste better.
Tastes better when it's sitting on the Ritz.
Ritz makes food taste great.
When it's sitting on a Ritz.
Try low salt Ritz too. Great Ritz taste with less salt.
I would build a great wall, and nobody builds walls better than me, believe me.
The Morning Stream.
A great pair of nerd glasses in about an hour. This is The Morning Stream.
You think we're getting punked by Donald Trump? You think he's just, is this just a giant joke?
No, definitely not. Okay. I think this is, it's a giant joke, but...
Right, but he's
not the one telling it.
Okay, so he's not trying to punk us. This isn't all... I mean, because there are times when he'll say things like that big wall thing, and I'll go...
Oh, no.
Why would you say that?
I've been watching the Apprentice more often than I'd like to admit. More often than any human being should admit.
Well, way more than I ever have, too. I maybe gave that thing 2 episodes and never cared, so...
We haven't watched every season. We've watched every season of the... "quote unquote celebrity," with asterisk Apprentice.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the hottest A-list celebs.
That's right. Yeah. Like that one person who played volleyball that one time on TV, or that other person who is the brother, really famous brother of a famous person. Mm-hmm.
Guy that was on Silk Stockings, I think he may have been in there.
Yeah,
he's
probably,
a hot star.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. A first assistant director for. The Bachelorette, I think it was.
Wow. Whoa. Highfalutin, man. Jeez. Look at
but,
the reach on that.
Yeah. So seeing there's nothing that he's doing in this campaign that is any different from the crap that he spewed on a daily basis on those shows.
So, and that's where my question stems. Like the stuff he did on the show, I always assumed was kind of, you know, staged and goofy. And
no, I think I honestly think that Donald Trump believes everything he says. And when he says that this golf course is the best golf course in the world,
that he genuinely
believes that he believes it.
Right. So no matter what it is that he believes is the greatest thing in the world, or that he really knows a thing or two about building walls.
Exactly.
And doesn't see the irony in what he's saying. Which is that he's great at putting up walls that keep people from progressing or having a conversation or getting anything done.
Here's the thing. The best part of Donald Trump is that he's arrogant enough not to have anybody who will filter him. He will insist upon the fact that there's nobody who can speak better Donald Trump than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And that is what's going to make this whole thing magic.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great because everybody else has got PR people and campaign people.
People who will say, oh, dude, don't go up and say that. You'll look like a complete idiot if you say that.
Yeah.
And
hey, Rick
make
Perry.
Make sure you eat a sandwich with a lot of mayonnaise right before you go up on stage.
It's so gross. Oh, that was it was foul. And the actual announcement video where he's got it, it's just as bad. Like that edit made it seem worse than it. Yeah. You know, I thought, oh, this is just exaggerating something that was tiny. It's like a big glop of goop. The whole time.
In the corner of his mouth for a good few minutes.
Oh, that was gross, dude. Shouldn't have had that gyro in the food court.
So please, Donald Trump, don't leave the candidacy, don't leave the process until they kick you out screaming.
Yeah, and don't hire PR. Don't have anybody telling you not to say. Rick Perry.
If you're going to hire PR, I hear Stephen Baldwin is available.
Oh, yeah. Now you're there. Wait, Stephen Baldwin.
Actually, that's a ticket I could stand behind. The Donald Trump, Stephen Baldwin.
Right.
Piers Morgan.
Yeah. Piers Morgan, Stephen Baldwin, and then can Secretary of State be Adam Baldwin? That'd be great.
Sure. If we can't get Omarosa, then Adam Baldwin is a perfect.
I'm all in. So last night I had a dream about Ross Perot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't want to freak anybody out here, but I had a dream that he died, and I thought he died already. So I looked it up this morning, and Ross Perot is still with us. He is 85 years old and still kicking it.
Are we sure it's not just Dana Carvey?
Well, it's hard to tell, right? Because he was so good.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I ran a Walmart for 75 years. And
you're pretty good.
You can just pretty much extrapolate that right out to the presidency. Same thing.
I like Ross Perot. He cracked me up. But he, he's 85 and still doing it. He's worth $3.7 billion as of 2015 and still lives in Texarkana, Texas.
Nice.
So there you go. I've been to his hometown. It's a dump.
Yeah,
all right.
I thought he was dead also. So
so there you have it. Well,
see, there's the one thing we learned today.
Politics 101. It's the morning stream for Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. I'm Scott. That's Brian. And we've got a show for you with stuff in it. I need to tell you a little story.
Okay.
And if you've got more Japan stuff, please do right after this. Okay.
I do. There's always going to be more Japan stuff and I can filter it in. But
good.
Let me let you talk for a while.
Well, I like
this. I'm going to let you finish.
I just need this because Beyonce's story about my walk yesterday is better than any other story.
It's the best story about a walk.
So, and man, you know what? Good on Taylor Swift for she was at the center of that interruption, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone forgets. They always remember, you know, Kanye being a dork.
Sure, right.
But they forget that she's standing there kind of sheepishly nervous, holding it like an award that was really for a country song in the end.
Right.
And looking a little nervous and all that. But look at her now, dude. Jeez. Yeah. This 1989 album is just freaking killing it.
It's great. And
it's
good
fun.
On her.
It's good. I like that song, the Now We Got Bad Blood. That one.
Mm-hmm. That's I haven't
fun.
Heard that one yet.
That's fun to sing. It's a good time. They have that great video with like future ass kicking chick stuff going on in it. It's good. You should watch it.
Anyway. Oh, that's the one with right. It looks like a Tarantino bit, right? Yes. Yeah.
And I can't.
It's like Fox Force 5 or whatever the thing that.
Very similar to that. Yes.
That What's Her Face was in. Mia from.
What was her name?
Mia Wallace. Well, it was Uma Thurman, but it was Mia Wallace was the character who did the.
Oh, are we talking, we're not talking freaking Kill Bill, are we? Are we talking Kill Bill? No. Something else?
Yeah. Oh, we're not talking about The Bride. We're talking about Mia Wallace.
Oh, I don't remember now.
Marcellus's wife, who you don't want to give a foot massage to.
Yeah, don't do that. Although Tarantino would love to. But anyway, so I'm out yesterday with the dog. Took her for a big, long walk. A long one, like way out in the freaking heat. It's 104 degrees yesterday. It was great. I'm loving it. Sweating, it's great, and it's just sunny, beautiful, awesome, and I'm taking her out, and she's a spaz, and she's so excited, and anytime she sees anybody, right, she's still a puppy, I mean, she's basically 3 years old in human years, in terms of her mentality, so she's just, she just wants to be with everybody, and loves everything, she doesn't have a mean bone in her body, she just loves dogs and people, and just wants to play, and hug, and lick, and just, she's the happiest rescue dog in the history of rescue dogs.
Nice. All right?
So that's good. So me and Jim Rayner out walking, and we call her Rayner for short. And she's doing her thing, and we're walking around, and I'm coming around the edge of the park, and I see a little kid. And most little kids are like, a puppy, and they want to come pet her, which is totally fine. She's not rough with kids or anything like that, so they can come pet her, and she'll get a little excited sometimes. Sometimes she'll pee, but whatever. And this kid on a little big wheel, you know, like a little, like a big wheel.
Yeah.
Is riding around probably... I don't know, six or something, this little girl. She sees us coming around the bend. And if you don't know who Rayner is, I mean, she's a black dog, got long legs. I suppose since dogs can't emote very well, you can't tell, you know, they don't smile or frown or whatever. They just have a face.
They just look, yeah, right.
I guess as a little kid, you'd see a black dog with white teeth panting heavily in the heat, and it might look a little freaky, I guess.
Sure, could be a little on the intimidating side. I could see that.
Sure. Yeah. So I whip around this corner as we're walking toward the edge of the street. We weren't even really that close to the kid, but the dog, as we get closer, he's kind of staring us down, and her eyes are following us as we're walking by. And Rayner sees her and then sort of lunges.
Oh, jeez.
But not in a bad
way. To lick her, right?
Yeah, just to go play. Yeah. And she's too far to anything to happen because I've got the leash on her and she's right there. She's not going to go anywhere. She's on a short leash. So she sort of lunges that direction, kind of yanks her neck a little bit and falls back down. But this action prompted this kid, this is the best thing ever, prompted this kid to go, like that. Screaming and staring at us while it turned its big wheel around, like it was almost cinematic in slow motion. Like looked at the dog with a big wide eyes, big mouth open screaming, but turning the bike kind of deftly, pretty well, right, while trying to get away, and then just starts pedaling like mad, still not taking her eye off the dog, the look of terror on her face. And the best part of it was she's not paying attention where she's going, and she rides her bike right up over the driveway bump, onto the sidewalk, and onto a lawn, because she's not looking, onto a lawn that has currently got all of its sprinklers in full bloom. So the lawn's going all over the place, and this kid gets stuck in the middle of the lawn, and now she's getting hit in the face with one of those things that are turning, and it's just going right in her face, and she's going, and she stops, and she's waving her arms, kicking her feet. She can't move. So she has gone from, like, I'm going to be eaten by this black beast from hell to I'm now stuck in a yard being, you know, laser shot in the face with all these sprinklers. And I'm starting to kind of crack up. I'm not sure what to do. Do I go help her? It's just going to freak her out if I bring the dog over.
To go help her, you're going to have to bring the dog with you.
Yeah, I don't have anywhere to. I don't have anywhere to tie her up. You know,
right into a wet cement and a oncoming bulldozer or something.
So then I hear the door open and the mom's there. And she comes running out to the yard. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And grabs the kid. And now the mom's soaking wet because the sprinklers are all on her. And she picks her up. And the big wheel goes kind of flying off to the side and runs her in the house. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? I felt really bad. But I didn't do anything. It's just she just freaked.
Yeah, you just walk with the
dog. I was laughing. I've never laughed so freaking hard, dude. I mean, I tried not to laugh while a kid was in peril. But later, it's all I could do.
So. That is fantastic. That's
really funny.
The visualization. Yeah. Oh, my God. I wish I could have seen that live.
It was really funny. I wish I would have had thought of at least, like, I don't know, maybe have the camera just stick out of my pocket. I wish I'd have gotten some of this on film.
Right, exactly.
Because it would have made, like, YouTube history with the way this kid was freaking out. Oh. Anyway, walk your dogs, everyone. Walk your dogs.
Walk your dogs every day.
Every day. So, and then real quick, I had a Twitter conversation yesterday.
Oh, boy.
I call them, quitters. Yeah.
Twitter conversations.
I like that. I guess I don't understand why people slam things for no reason. So I'm going to read you the exchange, and then you tell me what you think the psychology is. It's Therapy Thursday. Let's start early, all right? It said this. I sent a message out that said this. With all these positive early reviews of Ant-Man, it helps solidify the idea that just about any Marvel property could work on film. All right. Nice, interesting, positive statement from Scott Johnson for everyone to consume. All right. Guy writes back. It will fail at the box office. Don't care if it gets 4 stars.
Okay.
So I usually can't take stuff like that I can't. I don't know why.
You gotta learn to do that.
I know, but that kind of thing, it pushes.
Feeding the trolls is what you're doing.
It pushes a very specific button for me where I go, this is not logical. The humans are dead. Like, I'm starting to freak out. So I say, you have some kind of secret information? What are you basing that on? I said. And they wrote back, nobody can get excited about the power to become an ant. The movie will fail. Trust me on it. Now, I know and you know that movie's going to do bank. It's going to do great.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
I mean, it may not be Avengers money, but we're talking about whether this movie is profitable or not. I guarantee you it will be profitable. And all this early buzz isn't hurting at all. So I know that on the other end of this, I'll be able to tweet this guy and say, well, what do you got to say now for yourself? And I may end up having to do that because I just can't deal with it's one thing to say, I saw a thing and I didn't personally like it. No problem. Right. Or also okay to see a thing and say, you know, this whole ant thing, I'm not sure about that. I know some comic book fans are really into it, but I wonder if that's going to do well. All of this kind of speculation, totally good, man.
Right.
But when you come out and just go, it will fail at the box office. I don't care if it gets 4 stars. It's so final, sure, and cocky, cocksure, which is my favorite morning cereal.
My favorite level of DEFCON.
Oh, yeah. Cock 4 or cock shore.
Cock shore, yeah.
Cock 4. So anyway, I guess what I'm asking you is, did you go through a phase where you were just sure you had everything right and everything else was wrong and you just would, like, lay it out flat and say, trust me, I know what I'm talking about and walk away from it?
No, I don't feel like there was ever any point in time that I feel like I could say something like that with authority and just be anti for anti's sake.
Right. And
because I hate that.
Even if it was, I have a problem if it's pro something. Sure. If it's like just, it's nope, so done deal, over, period. Like when people put the word period at the end of their statement, mm-hmm. like this movie's going to fail, period, period.
Right.
And then a period after period. I can't deal with that. I don't know why it rubs me so wrong.
Yeah. It's so, I don't want to say illogical, but there's no sense to it. There's no benefit to the person saying it.
Yeah. And it's, right? it's, I mean, it's like
all they can do is look like an idiot if their prediction, if their announcement is wrong. I can't even really call it a prediction because they say it with such authority.
Right.
So it can only fail for them. It can only backfire for them. So why on earth would you do it?
And it's not a conversation. It's just right. this statement of it's nothing. It's right. like it's the epitome of passive aggressive. And look, I'm not naming this person, obviously, and I'm not trying to drag them through the mud or anything because people could probably search it and find it. But I'm trying to get behind the mentality. Like, at what point? It's like the most baseline, like, your team sucks, my team's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, let's get a more nuanced exchange going. That's, right. I guess, what I'm asking for here. And when I asked back, that's what I thought. Well, maybe I can squeeze it out of him. No,
yeah.
He can say, nobody can get excited about the power of Become an Ant. Oh, really? Nobody? So that's a very successful comic series. It proves that nobody was interested in that, I guess. Like, I just, this final, like, finality, blankety, statementy, bully, shitty.
Right.
It's just, I don't know why that bugs me so bad on the internet. That's the one thing. You could come to me and go, you suck. And I'd say, all right, I'm fine. Yes.
Nobody could get excited about a giant tree flying through space with a pet raccoon.
Yeah, where was this
Trust
guy?
Trust me on it.
Yeah, where was this guy before Guardians, I wonder?
Yeah.
I should have dug back. But then what always happens to me is I'll look at somebody's timeline and go, oh, okay.
Right. It is the thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me see if this is like unusual behavior for them. Or let me see if there's something else in their timeline. You know what it is? Because you're never going to find it. Here's exactly what it is. It is the old thing, if you're behind someone slow or behind someone who is driving like a moron and you come up alongside them and you look over and you say, yep, that's exactly what I thought you would look like.
Yeah.
No matter what they look like.
Yep. Yep.
Whether it's, you know, someone from someone, a teenager or a mom who's distracted by something,
yep.
or an old man or whatever.
Yep.
No matter, they could look exactly like you and you're going to say, yep, that's exactly what I thought you'd look like.
Oh, that's ironic you just brought that up, because last night we went to my daughter's house to bring her a gift before they went out. They're going out of town this weekend. And we went and did the doorbell ditch and left him something cool. And then headed home, we're in a 3-lane road, okay, at a stoplight. And I've noticed the two people next to me on both sides were driving slightly erratically before we got to the light. They were just a little swervy. Like, what is going on? And what I fully expected to find was somebody on cell phones when I got up there. But here's the best part. I pull up, lady on the right, totally looking at her cell phone. In a Lotus, by the way. I don't know what's going on there.
Wow, jeez.
And then the guy on my right.
Hands free, lady, jeez.
The guy on my left is like some 60-something-year-old dude. Reading a newspaper at the wheel. So I thought, wow, look at the generational gap here, but also look at how we never change. He's reading the evening paper, dude. Like, it's all spread out over the half of the dash and the freaking wheel thing, and he's flipping pages at the stoplight, and I'm thinking, you have got to be freaking kidding me, dude.
I used to work with a guy who, an older guy, we'll call him Charlie, because that was his name, and this guy would not wait for anything. Like, he was go, go, go lifestyle all the time. And there were times that he'd drive us somewhere and he would have the car shut off. As we were pulling into a parking space, his car door would be open and he's taken off his seatbelt and he's shutting the car off as the car is rolling into a parking space. That's that's kind of the way Charlie is. There's one day he's on his way, always went to Quiznos for lunch.
Yeah.
And there's one day I'm passing him, I'm heading somewhere for lunch, and I look over and like, oh, there's Charlie. And I wave at him. Well, he can't see me because he's reading Time magazine on his steering wheel while he's driving.
That is he's probably got some like serious like attention deficit disorder or something.
Something like that. Yeah. He's always go, go, go. And it was so hard to get out of his office. Like basically you get roped into these longer conversations and he'd say, well, all right, well, here's the first thing. And there was never, ever a second thing. Like first thing would go on for an hour.
Yeah.
So we figured out the best thing to do is you, if you had a question, ask Charlie and you had to go into his office, you'd kind of hop in there. You'd go in there and you kind of hop around on your feet a little bit and say, I'm on my way to the bathroom, but I really wanted to quickly ask you this before I go.
Yeah.
And that way you had an out.
Wow.
That's bathroom out.
I want to know that guy. I think that sounds fun.
He is, you know, in the long list of people that I've had the pleasure of working with,
yeah,
he is up there in the top three people that I've ever worked with. He is brilliant. He was kind of a mentor to me for a long time in advertising. And this guy was like, he was like Roger Sterling mashed up with Bert Cooper.
Like, I love
looked
it.
Like Bert Cooper, yeah, but had the business acumen of Roger Sterling. Wow. As a reference for those who don't recognize the names, but brilliant, brilliant guy. And, happy to call him friend and still talk to him every once in a while.
That's pretty cool. By the way, I could tell the girl on her phone. I could tell because I was closer to her. Kim was driving.
Yeah.
I could see that she was using Facebook.
Yeah. There's that blue. Yeah. Right. You see that blue thing.
Yep. Couple of auto run videos going and stuff like that.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, it's one thing to put us all in danger because you're getting an important text from your father or something.
Right. Yes.
It's a whole nother thing to put us all in danger because you found some kind of link to some Kardashian bullshit on Facebook.
You want to see what your friends are doing right now. Oh, you know, let's get, it's a good time to catch up with my friends and see what they're eating.
Perfect time here in this 40-mile-an-hour danger zone that we're in.
Right.
And then the other guy, what are you reading about? Like, what could you possibly need in that paper?
Pork futures are up. I'm going to have to put this on Facebook later. Damn it, Obama. Look at this Obama bullshit. Obama.
Anyway, well, there's our morning. We should call Daryl. Oh, do you?
No. You know what? We'll save a Tokyo thing for maybe TMSPM. There's one other thing I'll talk about. So it's perfect. Perfect capper for the end of the week.
Oh, and all right.
I posted a video on Facebook today. Maybe that woman was checking it out. But posted a video on Facebook today of a group called World Order.
All right.
And Timothy Kennedy reminded me of these guys. We saw him on The Amazing Race a while back as one of the challenges. These guys are like the Kraftwerk Blue Man Group of Japan.
Really?
It's a bunch of guys in suits. And they move and walk all in sync in this kind of slow motion thing. But this video for Have a Nice Day, which is the one I posted in on Facebook, they go to so many of the places that Tina and Tristan and I went that watching this video, it was like reliving our vacation with good music.
Okay, cool. I haven't seen that yet. I'll have to check it out. Please looky here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Stump a Trek Nerd, brought to you by...
Dun, 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 dun. Not all fantasy stories involve wizards, dragons, and incest. Some are about late-night diners, pastry-loving demons, and lessons that only flighty grandpas, can teach. These tales and more can be found in Jonathan Cadott's first collection of short stories, Fear and Feathers, Tales of Fantasy in Unexpected Places, now available for download on Amazon.
That sounds all right.
It does.
Daryl, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Oh, glorious. It's Daryl Skeels, everybody. And he's here to do Stump a Trek Nerd, which is where we give him, we feed him, I would say, Trek Nerd questions, and he answers them, and he tries to get them right. So far this week, 100% record.
Woo!
Amazing.
Wow. What?
All right.
poop.
All right. Daryl, do you know, I have so many of you. Let's look at a few of these.
Oh, poo. That sounds hard.
All right. It's an old one. How about this one?
You can't lick near the tail because that's almost poking out.
All right. Okay.
Oh, that's tender.
Yeah, see?
Oh, I'm going to lick it.
Okay.
Mine's defective.
This will get some good stuff from Daryl over the years. Oh, not that one. All right. Okay, now I got to stop. Daryl.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of people just got that box checked off on their bingo card.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Crap, I forget about the bingo thing and I don't like contribute. I'm trying to trick them. I'm trying to not fall into their trap, but I don't
know. You know what's funny is I could win bingo every single day. I could get a blackout before somebody else gets a bingo because all I have to do is just do all the things or goad you into all the things that are on my bingo card.
And we're not allowed though, right? We're not allowed to participate.
Play,
yeah,
no,
that sucks.
That'd be bad.
Yeah. What do they win? What do they have winnings? Like, how's it going?
Oh, no. It's they pop in the chat room and say bingo as soon as they get it, but.
It's like the old arcade games in the 80s. They said for amusement purposes only or whatever.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Right. Remember that? That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess
no wagering. You can't bet on Dig Dug.
Yeah. I think it came. My dad was in the arcade business, and I think he told me that it came from an earlier time where every amusement of every kind was meant to be gambly. And so, right. Like, early pinball machines had some sort of gambling element, and then they I don't know, some history there.
Yeah, there were some games that actually predated pinball that were more like Plinko at, Price is Right kind of thing, where you could get your money back, and so it was kind of a form of gambling. And then they added flippers and...
Yeah.
And spinners and stuff like that.
And they
said,
well, who will think of the children? And then they put these stupid disclaimers on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Street Fighter, can't gamble on it, turns out.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
Daryl,
no matter how good you think
it. Exactly. Daryl, let's give you your question. It's a Next Generation Star Trek question. And here it is. In the Next Generation episode, Unification Part 1.
The Spock one.
Yeah, that's right. The Enterprise arrives on Vulcan. Is it on Vulcan or at Vulcan?
On Vulcan. The Vulcan's the planet.
He wrote at, but I don't think he means at.
Well, it's at if you just orbit.
Well,
it's on.
Good point. Yes, you arrive at Earth or on Earth.
The proximity is what changes the meaning there, or the usage.
Oh, nicely done, Daryl.
Way to go. Picard and Riker are going over some debris that is Vulcan in origin. They say the debris was found on a crashed freighter. What species does the crashed ship belong to? Is it Klingon? Is it Ferengi? Is it Romulan? Or is it Andorian? That's Klingon, Ferengi, Romulan, or Andorian. Those are your options. Think real hard about those while you present us with Today in Star Trek History.
Well, on this day in 1983, the last newspaper strip of the Goodbye to Spock comic story arc is published, and that was written by Jerry Conway.
Wait a minute.
Oh, no way, really?
What is that? I didn't even know that was a thing. They had a strip?
Yeah, newspaper comic.
Ryan, what's it called? Goodbye to Spock? What?
Yeah, that story arc was
called Goodbye to Spock.
Yeah,
what was the comic strip called?
Yeah, what was it called?
Star Trek, I think.
Oh. Well, let's see. Don't type Goodbye to Spock in Google because you'll get nothing but funeral stuff about
the Star Trek comic strip. It was a newspaper comic strip based on Star Trek. Well, thank you for that. It ran for 4 years. 20 story arcs, 1979 through December 83.
Oh, there it is. Look at that. Oh, that's kind of cool. Was it any good?
I think it was. I've read a few of them, and they were pretty good.
Oh. And you're saying that the show's own friend, Jerry Conway, actually wrote... Wow, look at that. Jerry Conway was one of the primary writers of the strip in 1983, having written many comic books and television shows.
Yeah. Creator of The Punisher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Killed Gwen Stacy.
It says that right there. Oh, and Ernie Cohen.
Yeah. He, so his next great writing moment will be the foreword to the currently under Kickstarter comic compilation from the Extra Life comic, myextralife.com/book, Jerry Conway.
Prologue. What beloved character he's going to kill in the foreword?
Well... Hopefully not me. Very excited about him doing
nicely done, Daryl, by the way.
Yeah, nice job, Daryl. All right, well, happy birthday to that date, and may it ever rain.
What?
Daryl, let's get back to the... Oh, quick note of update here, a MASH update. They put... Oh, here, do I have a MASH update theme? I probably do.
MASH update?
Here we go.
That's what she said!
They put up yesterday, just yesterday, Jeannie, in fact, told me about it on Facebook or Twitter or something, that they... that Netflix got the finale up yesterday.
Oh, good.
After all this complaining that I was doing. And yeah, here's the great irony. I went to great lengths, some might call them dubious.
No.
To find a copy of it because I was so frustrated and I wanted my daughter to see it. She's been completely absorbed in MASH. Loved every second of it. Wanted to get some closure. So I went and found it for her, quote unquote, found it. And, as soon as I found it, it was up on Netflix. So I just deleted it, and we went and watched it on Netflix.
Nice, good.
But and she bawled her eyes out.
I'm sure.
Had a rough time there. She couldn't talk to me about it for about 5 hours. She just couldn't because if you bring it up at all, she'd get all teary and upset.
Because the chicken was a baby.
Yeah, the chicken was a baby. And now she understands why I kept yelling that in the house. Because she's like, Dad, have you seen the Stuttering Sister episode of MASH? And I go, the chicken was a baby! Now she gets it.
Nice.
And she goes, I didn't know that was going to be so sad. You made it sound like it was almost funny.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's what we've done to it, honey.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Daryl.
We laugh because it's easier than crying.
For people that don't like our MASH talk.
I don't give a shit.
All right, great. Daryl, where are we? The question. Let's get back to it. The Klingon, the Ferengi, Romulan, Andorian. So it was one of these origins that we found this debris, and they figured out that it was from one of those guys. So who was it? What ship?
There were Klingons in this. I think.
Okay.
What's going on?
You're a little laggy, but it's. Disappear. I think it's. Yeah, it's fine now.
Could be just me.
Yeah, I think it is.
Let's see. Romulans. Not Andorians. No. It's can't be that.
Is the Andorians the one with the blue-headed antenna people? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. White hair.
And in Enterprise, they were remote-controlled.
Right.
We were served by one at Quark's Bar in the Hilton, Las Vegas Hilton, back when there was a Quark's Bar at the Las Vegas Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
The Andorian came and served us our giant warp core breach.
Yeah. You poke in the eye with one of his antennae. Right,
she did not, but we posed for a photo with her.
Lovely. Daryl, did you say they were remote controlled in Enterprise?
Yeah. So they'd move around.
Weird.
The antennas would move around.
Really? Oh, the antennas were remote controlled. I thought you meant there was a storyline where the people of Andorian descent were remote controlled.
No.
Okay. All right. That would be weird. Oh, it turns out these antennas are because we control them. Sorry. Continue. That was pretty dramatic.
It was.
Right
then.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Oh, let's see. I'm just going to say, since it's... Oh, this is going to be wrong, but I've done so well this week, it doesn't matter anymore.
I've done so well, it doesn't matter. All right.
I'm going to say, since we're at Vulcan... Oh, no, I have to be right, though. No, I can't... No, this... I can't settle. So now I'm stressing out.
The inner monologue that we're having to get to at this point.
Exactly. Exactly. That's intense, what I'm hearing right now. It's a fight. It's a battle. It's the little devil on the shoulder yelling at the angel.
It's a little Andorian devil.
Yep. Little remote control antennas.
I think it's either Klingon or Romulan. And so I have to pick one.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Romulan, because that's what I first was going to say.
All right. Well, it's... You say Romulan over Klingon, that's shoulder pads over bumpy head is the effective change there. Let's find out if you're right. You are wrong. They say the items were recovered from a Ferengi ship.
Oh, I was really wrong.
Yeah, here's a clip of Gene Luck Pickard and Riker discussing this together.
Take a look at this. Turned up during an intelligence sweep.
Metal fragments.
What do you make of it?
Possibly disassembled components identified as Vulcan recovered from a downed Ferengi vessel?
They were found in crates marked medical supplies.
Contraband.
It's been sent to Vulcan for identification. Starfleet have requested that we lend a hand.
Wasn't Spock in the box or something? Wasn't there a deal like that? Or am I thinking of maybe mixing up some episodes? But I thought Spock smuggled himself in something. Do I have that wrong?
Spock in a box?
Spock in a box. Commander Riker, we've got a Spock box here. No, like it was like I might be mixing up with a Famke Janssen episode where she's in a box or a little tube or something. I don't know what the hell happened. There you go. Daryl ruined his perfect week by one thing. Daryl, it's fine.
I'd rather
fine.
Be really, really wrong like this, as Patrick might say.
then what?
Then have a close one that. I thought it was this, but pick the other one. Oh, I should have gone back, but no.
It's a good point.
Really, really.
All right. Daryl's the Trek Nerd on Twitter. You can find him there.
And by the way, in Skype, I just sent you guys both photos of me with the Andorian.
Oh, let's take a look.
And one of my crazy neighbors.
Oh, that's great. Okay, hold on. Oh, I don't think I've ever really truly seen the crazy neighbors in a head-on photo. Oh, there she is. Oh, no, I have seen her. I have seen her. And also the Andorian's the one in the middle. Just kidding. Crazy neighbor's got the thing. Oh yeah, she's lovely. She had to dress up like that every day to serve you food, didn't she?
Yep, pretty much.
Wow.
Handing us all warp core breeches.
And you
I have
are
a picture
like,
of the warp core breach too.
And you're like bowling shirt Joe over there. I freaking love it.
It's me and Charlie Sheen can pull off that outfit.
Oh, yeah, it's a total Charlie Sheen shirt. Oh, my gosh, winning. All right.
Except I alone and 2.5 men.
Oh, that's right. Is he? And he's not. But I heard some rumor he was coming back to that.
That show's over.
Is it over?
Yeah.
Okay.
He did come back for the finale.
Oh, all right. Well, screw
but,
him.
There's another photo there of the warp core breach. But anyway.
Lovely. Nicely done. Oh, yeah, look at that. Oh, look at that.
That blue is kind of not really the right shade of blue for an Android.
Is that the
well,
other
this
is that the crazy neighbor?
Crappy Trio smartphone or something at this point.
Is that the crazy male neighbor?
That is crazy male neighbor. Those are the two crazy neighbors.
That's great. I've never seen them together.
And a drink with like 12 shots in it.
Well, there you have it. Daryl, you're the Trek Nerd on Twitter. You can also find him at This Week in Trek, thisweekintrek.com, and the Grumpy Cast. What are you dropping? You all right over there?
What?
Hello? Hello, Daryl?
What?
What? What? For me, do
what?
You?
What?
We're
why
sort
did I not hear
what? We're sort of hearing
we
you.
We kind
of
hear you.
We're sending supplies to Mars. Don't worry. We're sending them to Mars. Okay. Oh, there he goes. He hung up on him. Oh, well. I guess we're not playing a game today.
Television highlights of the news of yesteryear.
It's the news brought to you by...
This week on Tell It Anyway, the perils of young love, the many downsides of being the DJ at your own wedding, and that time Jenny almost got arrested. Oh. So many bad decisions. Take a listen at tellitanyway.com.
Good news. Jeannie and her husband are coming to Nerdtacular together. Yeah, and he's awesome. He's like a big writer man. He wrote for Letterman for a while, and what
he
else?
He writes for, what's the sitcom? It's... They've talked about it actually on Tell It Anyway.
I know, remember. And I keep forgetting. But yeah. A bunch of stuff. He's like a writer.
Ask him when you see him at Nerdtacular.
Yeah, they're doing a panel and stuff. It's going to be great.
Cool.
Robots are getting married now. First the gays, now the robots.
This, you know what? This is going to set back the War of the Machines so far back if they're getting married.
Yeah. And by the way, I have made it very clear over the years that I am 100% for this idea of everybody quit acting like somebody should or shouldn't get married. Just let them do their thing, and you do your thing, and just shut up about it. You know, like quit acting like it's your job to decide what's right for everyone else. Let everyone else live their life. You have that freedom. Let them have it too. Right? That's kind of been my thing. Yep. So people need to quit sending me messages saying the real problem is they're gonna start forcing clergy to perform gay marriages. That is in fact, it was in the court's decision. It was in the what do you call it? Not the briefing, the whatever it is, the thing they write.
Right.
It was in that thing very explicitly saying that no one who disagrees with gay marriage should ever have to perform a wedding, including churches, clergy, anybody else. Of course, you don't have to. What are you thinking? This is like death squads or freaking any other bull honky that people make up. It's bullcrap. Quit acting like that's a thing. No one's getting forced to do anything. All right. Robots are getting married now,
though. All of a sudden, you're going to have to be married.
Two robots were wed in Japan over the weekend. Brian, you came home at the wrong time.
I know.
Dang it.
Were they gay robots?
Let's see. Well, let's find out. According to the Telegraph, I think you can switch them around.
Probably, yeah.
Froy's, Froy's. He's the groom robot. He married Yukurin. That was an android male made in the likeness of AKB48 idol Yuki Kashiwagi.
This is that AKB48 thing that
the one that Letterman kept going. Okay,
no, this is the one. No, that's how miso. Oh no, what was it?
Miso soup.
Hakune Misu, I think. No, or Hatsune Miku. No, AKB48 is the band I was talking about, that this 48 member girl group that one of the girls got kicked out of because she texted a boy. And now I wonder if Yuki Kashiwagi is the one that was Frankenstein together. So one of the members of the group doesn't really even exist. She's a digitally combined Frankenstein of like several other members.
Right. Oh, I love that this is even a thing.
I do too.
So there are a lot of photos of this particular person.
I think she's around.
She's bikinied all up and down the internet.
She's like 14 or something, right? She's 23.
Oh.
Oh, okay. We can look at photos of her. Okay, good.
It's not that creepy for you and I at all to look at 22-year-old photos.
Just the fact
photos.
That she's, you know, only a few years older than my son.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. I don't want
well, it's creepy,
it.
But it's not illegal.
No, no, no. Yeah. And
it's a big difference.
Brian, important distinction. Thank you for that.
Right, exactly.
Let's see. Froy's, the bulky groom, was made partially from a trash can. Married the Ukarin android lady. The wedding was was officiated by another robot named Pepper. She usually is helping customers at a SoftBank cell phone store.
Of course she is, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, we all have our day jobs.
At the end, she gave them all about a service plan.
Yep. Our the ceremony was sealed with a kiss, which probably sounded like... Hold on, I got a sound effect for this. Probably sounded a little something like this. There you go. That was their kiss. The guests who were paid about $80, they all paid about $80 to attend. They were attendant thing. They were treated to a robot sliced cake and a robot wedding band. The robot's big day was put on Japanese or was put on by the Japanese company Meiwa Denki, which also designed the out of his league Froy. And Yurkian is the creation of Japanese artist Takeyuki Todo.
Okay.
According to the International Business Times. Clearly, I am cut out to read Japanese names.
Sure. Did you have you looked at this photo?
No. Let me take a look.
It's pretty evident which robot they spent a little more time crafting.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? That's the robot?
That's
stupid.
The robot, yeah.
Why isn't it just waving its arms going, warning, warning?
Pretty close.
That's really dumb.
It's like a fried chicken bucket with a harmonica staple to the front.
Oh, I just realized I was going to post it in the chat, and I realized that I'm not even in the chat today. Like an idiot.
All right. Anyway. They noticed. They brought it up.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. Here's a link.
I just didn't.
And there's a link you probably already have, so enjoy that. Terminator Genesis. Oh, this is interesting right here.
Okay.
It's out in theaters today, right? So big deal, I guess. Whatever.
Oh,
people
right.
Hate it.
Yeah, because of the holiday weekend, so they're letting it out early.
That's right. A reporter named... This is great. A reporter named Sarah O'Connor... Okay. The O.
Really?
Yeah. Sarah O'Connor, here's her actual name, broke a story about the beginning of the robot apocalypse or something like it. Terminator Genesis out today. Let's see. While we're busy in the theaters, the robot apocalypse may have already been upon us. A reporter named Sarah O'Connor reported on a Volkswagen robot that works in a factory. So it's like a Volkswagen assembly robot. Killed a worker in Germany. And Sarah O'Connor...
I'm not laughing about the robot killing a worker
course.
In Germany. I'm
of
laughing
course.
At these tweets.
I mean, honestly, could you have had... We all have sometimes unexpected deaths. Things happen, you know, in our lives that are kind of shocking. But whoever gets to have their death tied to the most ironic tie-in to a stupid Terminator reference?
And I love her tweet that says, guys, I don't even know what Skynet is.
Yeah, yeah. She's like kind of baffled by why everyone's freaking out because she doesn't get it. But isn't that insane? Sarah O'Connor? What are the chances?
Poor Sarah O'Connor. You know, and she would have been one of the ones. Remember, you know, the first Terminator went through all the Sarah O'Connors before he finally found the right one.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah.
It killed
like
them all.
Every Sarah O'Connor in the phone book because apparently they didn't have internet in the future.
Oh yeah, that's
right.
You could
just download that information before he came, before time traveled back.
That stuff's funny when they, yeah, certain innovations just really kill old movies.
Yeah,
in some ways, and no one ever seems to predict the internet. Like they were all very bad at that. I can't think of a movie that was chat room. You can help me out here, but were there any like big movies in the 80s or even 90s, early 90s that kind of nailed predicting what the internet would do? I don't think any of them really did. Not really. No. I mean, like, you know, video phones and Alien, that makes sense. We can do that now. What else? Nobody else was like, let me search this giant internet connected network thing that we all can connect to. No one ever really did that. Anyway.
People are saying Sarah Connors. Isn't the character Sarah O'Connor, isn't it?
No, it's Sarah Connor. It's missing the O.
Okay.
But that's the funny bit, is that she has an O, but other than that, it's identical to the name.
You know, the funny thing is that I think... I've always thought that the character in Terminator was Sarah O'Connor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
that's great.
I'd always call that TV show the Sarah O'Connor Chronicles. You can look back. I think I've even done it on TMS. I've called it the Sarah O'Connor Chronicles.
You made it longer and harder to say than it
I
already
really
was.
I overcomplicated it.
And it was already overcomplicated. That's amazing. That's really funny. Justice League Dark lost Guillermo del Toro.
Okay.
This is a thing that was, it was being talked about, bandied about for a good year or so now. That director was linked to directing Justice League Dark for Warner Brothers / DC Comics. He's talked about the project several times in interviews, and whilst Del Toro focuses on releasing Crimson Peak later this year and then shooting Pacific Rim 2 in time for 2017, Justice League Dark will have remained in his docket until now. Set to unite characters such as Swamp Thing, Dead Man, Zatanna, and Constantine under one movie roof.
Whoa.
It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
It is not happening with him. It's no longer attached to the project. Let's see. We're skipping ahead here. See if there's anybody. Yeah, there's no other. So nobody's been named as a replacement and no sign of a release date. So
get Bryan Singer.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Maybe. I don't know. Well, he screwed up Batman Returns kind of.
David Fincher, maybe.
Fincher could do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fincher, do you think Fincher has an itch to do?
It'd be great to see Fincher do a comic book movie, any comic book movie.
I kind of agree.
Yeah.
There was some talk that Robert Downey Jr. is doing a Pinocchio, live-action Pinocchio movie, and that he would direct it, and it would be written by Paul Thomas Anderson.
What?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it was weird. Something I remember where I saw it now. I was going to talk about it on the show, and I forgot. Let's see if I can just find this real quick. Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah, here it is. Paul Thomas Anderson to write live-action Pinocchio for Robert Downey Jr. Disney owns all that, so I don't know what happens there.
Interesting.
I think they own that, do they? I don't know. That's the original story's not theirs, but Disney co-opted it, I think. Anyway, right. There's the link chat room. You can read
it. Some Danish folktale or something.
Who knows? Finally.
Italian, maybe?
Sesame Street's losing someone.
Aww.
Not to death or anything. It's fine.
Oh, okay, good.
Maria. Remember Maria?
Oh, totally remember Maria.
Yeah, everyone loves her.
How do you solve a problem like Maria?
You can't.
You fire her.
Her real name is Sonia Manzano, and she's retiring from the show after 44 years.
Wow.
That is insane.
That thing debuted in 1969, so she wasn't an original cast member.
Nope, she showed up in 70, right. I guess. Let's see. News of her departure. This was came as a tweet from the American Libraries Association, which is a little bit weird. She says, maybe I'll go back for the 50th anniversary and make a guest appearance, she said in a response to a fan. She also admitted she has always been in love with Oscar the Grouch and asked fans to not be bummed about the news, which is probably going to be harder than it sounds. Apparently a very nice woman. And that's a long time.
Is Gordon still on?
Gordon died, I think.
Mr. Hooper died.
Sesame Street.
Gordon died? Oh, I'm sad by that.
Deaths. Let's see.
Oh, God, you found a page of...
I'm going to find out. Characters who have died. Oh, these are Muppets, though.
oh, really?
Yeah, that ain't good. I don't want to read that. That freaks me out. On the Muppet Gordon, Wiki has all the Muppets.
So Gordon's name wasn't Gordon either. It was played by Roscoe Orman.
Yeah, I don't think any...
He retired in 2014.
Oh.
Still alive, though.
Oh, okay, good. Who was the one I was thinking of?
He was in striking distance with Bruce Willis.
Really?
Yeah. Needs to go on the list.
So Mr. Hooper died, and they made a big deal on the show of it. Maurice? What's his deal?
Maurice.
Remember Maurice?
Oh, I remember Luis.
Luis, that's what I'm thinking of, not Maurice.
Yeah.
Luis. What
happened Emilio to him? Delgado. Uh-huh. And he...
still with us?
I think he's still on.
Okay.
It's like since 1971.
All right. Who is... He reminded me of like a Latino Barry Manilow for some reason.
Oh, I can see that. Sure.
And then who's the other guy? David. What happened to David?
They're saying that David died.
Oh, David died?
I don't remember David. Let's see.
He was openly gay or something, and there was a big controversy with that.
He was the one who looked like Neil Sedaka, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He died?
Oh. Let's see here. Sesame Street.
This is all very
David.
Morbid. Yeah.
Oh, no. David was the black guy with the kick-ass sideburns.
Oh, not that him then. Is he still around? He's still with us.
I think he's still around, yeah. Right. Bob. Bob was the
That's it.
Neil Sedaka look-alike guy.
And is he alive?
Let's see here.
Tell me, Bob's alive.
This is fascinating. This is great. Bob McGrath. There you go. The one actor on Sesame Street who actually used his real name.
Yeah.
Still alive.
Good.
And he's been married to Ann Logan Sperry since 1958. They have 5 children, so probably not gay.
No, probably not. Never say never, but probably not.
Let's see.
I don't know why I think I remember.
He and Loretta Strong are the only 2 original human cast members remaining on Sesame Street.
She's still doing it. Jeez.
I guess so, yeah.
That's a good gig, man. Why give it up?
No kidding.
The heydays, though, man. The 80s, the 70s and 80s for Sesame Street. Unbelievably rad. What a cool show. Kidding. I would love
before Elmo came along and really ruined everything.
Freaking Elmo.
Yeah.
You little red turd. Don't tell the kids I said that, everybody. All right.
No, but it's pretty dang true.
It's a different generation. They get it. They like Elmo. I understand.
Elmo.
TweakedAudio.com is sponsoring today's program. Please go visit them at TweakedAudio.com. Choose something rad from their great collection. Stick it in your ear holes and listen to our show on your fresh new pair of earbuds. With a big discount. Use the code STREAM at checkout for 33% off at tweakedaudio.com. We're going to take a break when we come back. Oh, David is dead, says Dice Tomato.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Oh, didn't say that on the on his IMDb page.
Yes, Red Lynx, the Muppets are killing off people, one at a time.
Somebody better keep an eye on Snuffleupagus.
Yeah, keep an eye on that big dumb elephant.
Person of interest.
Yep. We don't know where he's keeping the bodies. Maybe in the lower half. That's where they are. Wendy will be here in a minute. We're going to do some therapy today. It's kind of related to a question we've done before, but an interesting twist. So we'll get to that in a bit. Before that, Brian brought music, and I can't wait to hear it.
I did. Brian Shinsek wrote in and said, "Hello, Scott and Brian.
Hi.
On July 4th, my lovely girlfriend Kelly and I will be celebrating our one-year anniversary. We've been listening to TMS together since we've started dating. Discussing each episode's topics has been one of the great ways we've been able to bond and to get to know each other well. Oh, I'm so happy we found each other, and I love her more and more each day. So I'd like to dedicate a song to Kelly. Let's see. Feel So Close by Calvin Harris has become our song. If you find a worthy cover of that, I didn't. So he said, go with the second one. Perhaps a Disney cover by Suburban Legends or any upbeat song of your choosing would do the trick. Shout out to our friend Mary, who sends you all those wacky flavors of Oreos. We usually get some to try too. Let the fireworks explode, yo. Signed, Brian.
All right.
Didn't have a cover of that, Calvin Harris tune. And Disney seemed to work today because we've actually got 2 Disney songs. Like Monday was all Hall & Oates. Today is going to be all Disney. At least the first half of the day is all Disney. This is the Suburban Legends. Big thanks to Willie Dills because he was the one who let me know about Suburban Legends. Actually, during the Coverville Coverthon, he told me about the band and even hooked me up with a link to get the album. I bought it, played it right then and there during the Angry Chicken segment on the Coverthon a couple years ago.
Would you say he turned you on to it?
I wouldn't say that, and I made sure not to say that.
Okay.
Thank you, Veronica, for turning me on.
All right.
See? Because I know what Ice Worm and Freakish Lemon are going to do if I say that. This is from the water one, Little Mermaid.
The water one.
The water one.
Uh-huh.
You know, the water level. Disney movie. from their album, Dreams Aren't Real, But These Songs Are, from 2013. Here is Suburban Legends and a cover of Kiss the Girl.
There you see her sitting there across the way. She don't got a lot to say, but there's something about her. Don't know why, but you're dying to try. You wanna kiss the girl.
Kiss the girl.
Yes, you want her.
La, 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 la,
the girl, you know you do.
La, la, la,
it's possible she wants you to. There's one way to ask her. Don't take a word, not a single word. You wanna kiss the girl.
Your move,
no time will be better. She don't
When I bite into a York peppermint patty, I get the sensation of being on top of a cold mountain. And all I want to do is yodel. Yodel-ay.
Get the sensation of deep chocolate covering cool, cool peppermint.
Mmm. When I bite into a York peppermint patties, I'm getting the sensation of a little bit shivers tippy-toeing up and down my spine. Mm.
York peppermint patty. Get the sensation.
I'm really rich.
The Morning Stream, where man is made whole.
All right, we're back. He's really rich.
I'm really rich.
I hear that. I hear that he spent $3 on a website.
Yeah, he's so rich because he's such a freaking cheapskate on his web work.
You know what he sells when he needs more money?
What's that?
China!
He hopes to own it one day. I enjoyed that, the water level of the song you just played. That was amazing.
Yeah, I was saying in the chat room that... So Little Mermaid is the water level, Aladdin is the desert level, and WALL-E is the space level.
Perfect. Makes perfect sense to me. Mm-hmm. All right. We got Wendy Collin, or Colin Wendy, something like that. We're calling her. That's
we're calling Wendy calling.
Yeah, she's not calling us. What does that remind me of? Oh, hi. Good morning. Or evening.
Hi, good morning.
Night.
Good evening.
I guess.
Afternoon.
Whatever it is where you are.
Yeah. And what time is it there? Like 8 o'clock or something? 7?
6.
6. All right, not too bad. You still have some evening left.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, the sun doesn't set till midnight, so.
Does it really? That's weird. Isn't that weird? It feels inhumane. You shouldn't have to look at the sun that late, right?
Well, let me tell you, the night's kind of fine, except that I really stay up so late because it doesn't feel right to go to bed until it's at least darker, you know? Mm-hmm, it's weird. Mm-hmm. But the mornings are killer. So this morning, Pete climbed into our bed at 4 a.m., and it is totally bright outside, so he's like, it's morning. Yeah. I'm like, no.
Yeah, little kids,
oh, that would be hard to get used to.
Yeah.
Really hard. So little
kids have that built-in weird instinct to like crack a dawn, get up, and you know, yeah, make everybody
and
else
the
be
dawn
excited.
Cracks at 3:45, it's rough.
Yeah, they're like puppies that way. It's weird.
They are like puppies.
Hey, when they're
but
teenagers,
it also has this like forever summer feeling, which is awesome.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. When they're 15, they don't do this at all. They stay in bed till noon.
You can't get them out. Yeah.
I cannot wait for that.
Yeah. Tristan woke us up at 5:30 this morning. He'd been up all night and woke us up banging pots and pans in the kitchen because he was going to make what I refer to as prison cinnamon rolls. He's taken slices of bread, buttered them, put cinnamon between them, smashed them with a rolling pin, and tried to cook them in a pan with some spray oil
at 4 in the morning,
5:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh! And it's he hadn't slept the night before.
No, he has not slept. I think jet lag is affecting him a lot more than us.
Oh, that's right. They just got back from
Japan.
Oh
yeah, he was hungry, so there you are.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Wendy, it's good to have you on. It's my sister Wendy. She's a therapist. She helps real people with real problems, and we do it every Thursday here on the show where we answer questions submitted by you. As always, you can send those in to themorningstream@gmail.com. We're happy to field them. Sometimes shorter is better, folks. That's all I would say. and also just a quick update. In less than 30 days, you'll all see Wendy at Nerdtacular. So there's that.
That is correct. In all my white glory, and I will bring along some kind of gross thing in a tube.
All right, great.
And please don't bring that thing that we're seeing on the internet, this like fermented.
Oh, the lutefisk stuff?
Yes, don't bring that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't. I think it's illegal to take it out of the country, actually.
So. Yeah. Good. There's a law I can stand behind.
There's a video.
Yeah,
there's
no worries.
There's a BuzzFeed video of a bunch of people in that office trying to eat it, and is one of the most foul things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like gray boogers.
Yeah. It's the real deal.
That'll be really fun. I'm 100% sure that my sisters and mom and everybody have already locked Wendy in for all her other not nerdtacular activities. So you're gonna have a very busy couple of weeks here, is my thinking.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, here's your question. Are you ready for this thing? Here we go. Dear Scott, Brian, and Wendy. Somebody we're gonna call Jay. I love the show and I've been listening since episode 1. This is my first time writing in, and I asked for a little help from Wendy. I have heard Wendy talk about her hypersensitivity to other people and being able to read other people's body language. I have this also to the point that I usually develop a first impression of a person within a minute or so and will not want to interact any further after a bad impression. I have said hi to someone and walked away because of a bad feeling I got. My wife hates this, but openly admits that I'm rarely wrong in my first impressions. I'm unsure if we are using confirmation bias data or I'm actually right a lot. So he's not sure. Here's the interesting bit. He says, I am a police officer and use this constantly on the job and off to the point where my wife thinks I'm just avoiding people on my days off so I will not have to read them. Going out can be exhausting to me because I'm constantly reading the room and the people coming and going. I'm writing to ask you if there is a way for me to turn this off. I have tried just relaxing when I'm out and about, but I feel exposed and vulnerable. I really would like to be able to go out to dinner and be able to sit with my back to the door and not have to constantly check when people come and go. He put paranoia with a question mark in parentheses. I'm not sure why. He wants to know if that's
because he can't sit with his back to the door. And
I guess so. Yeah.
He's wondering. Yeah.
That makes sense. I would love to install a switch where I turn it off when I get home. I know most cops have this trait and just live with it, which I have been with no huge ill effects.
Most cops have this trait and just live this way, which he has been with no huge ill effects.
It's a weird sentence. Except for a bit of added stress when in public. This not huge problem was just looking for a way to reduce the stress of life and live better. I have been a cop for 12 years. A little background. I have taken a lot of training in interviewing skills and detecting deception, so I know I've just reinforced the trait I'm trying to suppress. I also love the book by Gavin D. Becker, Gift of Fear, which also may play into my quick judgments and avoidance behavior. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Jay. All right.
Okay.
So Gift of Fear, what's that about? What's going on there?
Okay. So that I don't know if you remember the episode where I told you how I was going to beat up that guy I thought was following a kid home from school.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I just read that book.
Oh.
And it's all about like trusting your gut, right? Your instincts if there's danger, basically, right?
Right.
So, you know, people are funny. We're either, it's like chicken the egg question all the time. Is he like that book because he's already doing that stuff? Or is that book really creating that in him and other people? I mean, I think it was written for people who don't necessarily pay too much attention, trying to help them to do so. But then there are people who are just born on alert. And the guy who wrote the book is actually one of those who's had been abused as a kid and was really in tune when situations got sort of scary or negative. And now he's hired by people all over the world to do risk assessment. And
Does his stuff go into how he's able to discern between a misread and an accurate read, or is he claiming that every negative impression is always an accurate read?
Well, no, and it's not really in the book about that per se, but it sounds like the emailer is had training in deception and motivation and interesting stuff with interviewing, because people lie to cops all the time, right?
Right.
And maybe he's done investigations or something, and so you got to figure out what there's a lot of research on what we know when someone lies and when someone doesn't lie and what it looks like and what their eyes do and their body language. And there's a number of things that can really like pinpoint whether someone's telling the truth or not. So it's tricky because once you know all that stuff, it's hard not to bring that into your regular life, right? Mm-hmm. That's just going to happen naturally. So I think there's a couple things going on for him. First of all, do you guys do this where you go to a restaurant? Do you even think about where you're sitting?
I totally do. It's funny. When he said that, I was like, God, I didn't ever consider myself paranoid, but I always like to sit facing the door. And Tina's just, I guess, subconsciously figured this out and will always take the seat with her back to the door so that I can sit facing the door.
Oh, interesting. Because you guys are getting used to how you do those patterns. I don't know that I do it or not now that I think about it. I think I probably don't prefer... The only thing I prefer is booths. That's it. Like, give me a booth.
You want to be back in the womb. That's what that is.
Yeah, I guess so. It's comfortable back there. I like it.
Yeah, it is comfortable and warm. No, so the reason I ask is because I think the world's divided into sort of two people in a restaurant, and it's the ones who don't even think about it. They may have a preference, like a booth, or I like a table with a stiff chair or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, Scott and I and majority of people probably. And then there are those who it is not necessarily paranoia. I guess it could be, right? But in this guy's case, I would not say it's paranoia at all. It is training and some other things that sort of in the end you don't put yourself in vulnerable positions because you know better. You know, if someone came into a restaurant and was going to shoot up the joint, if you are facing the door, you're going to see the risk right away mm-hmm. and be able to act, right?
Yeah.
And that is the way at least a police officer is trained. So, Brian, are you secretly a police officer? Or
well, if I was secretly a police officer, I couldn't tell you, could I?
Exactly. Oh. So that means he is. Well, and I read a book once. I had a client who did military, some military training, did gun training and did lots of gun safety for people. And, you know, was very, very into that world and just the nicest teddy bear of a guy. And he always struggled between wishing he could just be like everyone else and go to a restaurant and face any direction and not think about it. And this was not a cop or really a military person in the end. It was just someone who had, you know, safety as a hobby, I guess. And he gave me this book once. He's like, just read a little bit. Just this will help you understand me. Now I can't remember what it is. This was years ago. But the person sort of described everyone as either being sheep or what are the dogs that herd sheep?
Sheep dogs.
That's the word.
Wow, that was a Johnson moment, dude, is what that was.
It was a Guitar Hero moment right there.
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay, so anyway, sheep dogs that are on alert, they never hurt the sheep, right? They may snap at a sheep to get it so it's safe, but their job, and they don't ever relax while they're around other sheep, is to, you know, pay attention and be on alert. And sheep are like, and bumping into things, and it's Scott and I at a restaurant, right?
Right.
And not that every restaurant's dangerous, obviously, but there are often people that feel this way, and they can't kind of stop. And it sounds like this guy is probably a really good cop. Right. He's having a hard time not bringing all of that home. But all of that, like his superpower as a cop, is what makes him so good. But there's a couple things he can try. One is, when it doesn't matter, practice something else. Right. So, for example, when I smell crazy on someone, I have to make a call. Does this matter? Right. Like, can I do anything actually to help this person right now? Or is it my place? Is it ethical? Is this the right time? Or is this just, I have to let this go by me? Like
separate work from personal kind of thing.
Exactly. Like, I'm just a regular person. No one here knows what I do. No one knows that I have a couple things I could say that might be helpful.
Superpowers. It's not like,
yeah. No one knows I have my S t-shirt underneath my other shirt. So, so you have to kind of make a call of like, is this something I can do something about? And then there are moments where you don't even have to make that call because there's some, in my personal experience, there's someone having kind of a mental breakdown in front of other people and everyone's backing up and doesn't know what to do. And so that's when I don't feel like I have a choice and I don't really think, I just act. And so some of it becomes instinctual, right? But when there's a space, usually, that is, I'm at a party, I meet somebody, and they're like, zabadabada. And I'm like, whoa, okay, there's stuff there. And they're like, interesting, okay, it's so nice to meet you. And I just don't engage on a deeper level. I don't ask deeper questions like I tend to accidentally do sometimes, right? And in his case, his is more of a... maybe a safety-based thing as a cop more than my experience, which is more of a just, this person's really sad. Like, I can see someone across the room and be like, they're sad. But
it's hard to tell from his email if he does it from a safety thing, because it's in his social life. He's meeting these people.
Right.
And he just walks away because because of a bad impression. I'm not sure if it's a safety thing or if it's a... Yeah, just get me away from.
Well, sometimes
person.
Isn't it just it takes freaking work to like evaluate
it's
a person?
An energy thing.
Yeah, it takes energy. Yeah. You've been doing that all day. Like your job it involves you being so in tune with what somebody's actions are going to be or what they're saying and what it means. Right. And so when you're like, oh, we're going to meet the Jensens tonight at this party for the first time, and you're like, oh my gosh, do I really want to like?
Jensens.
He's an accountant. I don't want to try to figure him out. Like, I'd rather just watch TV and watch characters who aren't real do things like that. Sometimes I feel that way sometimes. I totally get that.
That's and that is really common and really normal to especially if he's a little introverted as well, which is it's going to take energy to do that. And then people are energy suckers, especially if you're really in tune to other people and kind of thinking about their motives or watching their behavior, or you're assessing them as, you know, you're sort of, you can't help it, right? Mm-hmm. And that takes energy. So instead of going out and getting rejuvenated and feeling relaxed, he's having the opposite experience, which, you know, is understandable. But this is when a lot of people kind of just get isolated, right? They just can't do it. They can't figure out how to do it. But he has this great asset called his wife. She sounds like she's on to him. Mm-hmm. she gets this, and she expresses her frustration and some different things. So maybe what he could do is team up with her a little bit on how to let go in a certain situation, you know, how to make that call when, you know, if he just needs to pretend for a minute with someone, what's the code for her to intervene so she can take over the conversation? Mm-hmm. You know, if he's low on energy or whatever, because it's hard. He may think he's right all the time about first impressions, and he might be, but the challenge is it's confirmation bias when you continually do the same thing and then you never really get to know somebody so that then you believe you're correct and that all these people are bad. And this is a little bit of a problem for sheepdogs or cops or, you know, people who have their face to the door at restaurants is you get a little bad world syndrome where
you start thinking
bad.
That everything is,
yeah,
that all sheep are bad or that
all sheep are bad.
People who walk
all
into
sheep
the
are stupid.
Yeah.
So all sheep are stupid and all sheep are bad. So you either have someone who's stupid or bad, which when the whole world is stupid or bad, why would you want to leave your house? And, you know, I honestly, and not that we want to talk about race, even though I've had some really interesting race things happen to me recently, but, I think of a lot of the stuff that's happened recently in the States with, police brutality and,
right,
and these accidental deaths and whatnot. And I think some of this comes down to this: people are stupid or bad. It's hard to not get there. I mean, there's a reason cops burn out. There's a reason, you know, it's a difficult, position to be in because you dehumanize humanity in order to get up and do it again the next day. When I've worked with couples who one of the partners is a police officer, I mean, that is a tough marriage, because the one kind of needs to shut down emotionally to handle what they're experiencing. And I always find this interesting. It tends to be men that are the policemen in the couples that I've worked with, and they tend to sort of emotionally shut down with their wife, but then they will play, what's the game where you shoot other people?
Call of Duty or
Call of Duty. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like then they, you know, they go home from this totally stressful, you know, thing where they are carrying weapons and they are dealing with people, and then they go home and then they shoot the crap out of everything. And it might just be like to just burn off the tension that they've felt all day. Right. Mm-hmm. And not to say it, maybe they could play some other game that would give them the same thing, but it's often Call of Duty. Interestingly.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So is the result of this, like basically not trying to tell him to kind of turn off this behavior, but to turn off his reaction to the behavior. So in other words, instead of making the judgments, which he's just going to automatically do, is the advice then to say, don't act upon it. You know, instead of walking away, sit there and not just make sure you're right, because it's almost like a self-expectation kind of thing. Like if you expect something's going to be bad, you're going to see the bad in it. But to just put up with it and maybe it'll be wrong kind of thing.
Well, it's like Wendy always says, lean into it, right? Is that what this is?
Yeah, a little bit. And also, and Brian, that was very good clarification, because it is not something he can turn off truly. Mm-hmm. Because I guarantee I could follow him around for a day and ignite that part of him that is so valuable as a police officer, and for the rest of us dumb sheep, we need him to be this way. I could ignite that easily by just doing certain behaviors that would trigger those responses. And then, you know, that would start up. You know, I have a brother who's an ER doctor, and he is the most relaxed person I've ever met. Like I sometimes want to like ding him, like get a bee and stick it in his shirt and be like, let's see if you ever freak out. I mean, he's so calm, right? But part of that is, of course, his training, and he sees people with like limbs cut off and stuff.
Sure.
But it's also really intriguing when anyone is hurt or anyone is even, you know, it's still calm, but it is like laser beam focused.
But he reacts to it, and he doesn't separate it so much that he's like, oh, well, they'll get over it kind of thing.
No. And even, I mean.
I'm off the clock. He'll fix a Band-Aid, yeah. Whatever.
Whatever you want. Yeah, like when his daughter sniffed you remember those mints that are so hot? They're from England. What are they called? I can't remember anything anymore.
Altoids?
Altoids, yeah. His daughter quaked one up her nose.
Oh, God.
And he couldn't get it out. And he's like, I'm an ER doctor, for crying out loud. He had to go in and steal one of the tools and go out in the parking lot and pull it out of her nose.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, so they didn't get charged. But
probably minty fresh for a month, by the way.
Right. Oh, all you can smell for the next
6 years. Yeah. Can you imagine your eye watering would be intense? But okay. So point is that it's not important that he turns it off. But what is important is that he finds a way to live with his superpower. Right. A little bit of like you said, don't make the call or just make the call before you go out that night. That no matter what anyone says to you, it doesn't matter. And you don't care. And then when something's really alarming, you're still going to hear it and see it and whatever. But for the most part, it's not going to be alarming at the neighborhood barbecue, right? But maybe figure out other social ways to interact that feel less this way. So I don't know how much he interacts with other police officers. So if a bunch of sheepdogs get together for a dinner, who sits with their back to the wall or back to the door?
Right.
And maybe they relax because they're together. So, you know, is he socializing with other sheepdogs? Is he only hanging out with stupid sheep, right? And then also go into a situation having your expectations like the lowest possible. Just say, everyone's going to lie. Everyone's going to be deceptive. It doesn't matter. And practice breathing. Talk to your wife. Have some strategies before you go in. Because the answer to this is what Brian said. It's not that you can turn it off. But that you can maybe tone it down. So my experience personally is when I go to certain places, it's like a volume. I just turn down the equalizer or whatever. And when I hear crazy stuff, I just imagine it like, oh, that was just fuzzy. Like I didn't hear that, you know? I have to remind myself, you know, people are people. They'll find help somehow. It's going to be okay. Or whatever I have to do to say to myself, okay, don't get involved. Don't waste energy. This isn't your place. And in his case, he has this ability to just walk away, which is socially weird too. Like that's not okay. It's not okay to be like, let me do therapy, but it's also not okay to be like, that was stupid. Bye. You know, like you can't just walk away. Is there a way to communicate that still feels authentic to him, but doesn't require him to be like, this guy is a liar? And, you know, every guy at a party's a liar. Like, just go in knowing that, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a couple things there he can work on. And he knows his own personal little favorite things that he does. And his wife does as well. So he should definitely consult with her. Yeah. And then come up with a game plan how to handle it.
Right. I like this advice. Also, I also like that cops are on alert like that. Sometimes that's comforting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then... I don't know, the way you've explained it today, in light of recent events and other things, it takes on a different, not more sinister tone, but it does, you know, you can see where it maybe goes too far.
There's a difference between bumping into you at a backyard party and saying, ugh, I don't want to talk to that guy because he's a podcaster, versus I don't want to talk to that guy because I think he's deep down an axe murderer.
Right. There's a big difference. Exactly. And and understanding that everybody at every, like Wendy said, everybody at every party is kind of full of crap. Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like always. Half the reason
always,
they're
always
there.
Lying.
Think about when you go to like a neighborhood barbecue. It's all innocuous enough, but sometimes you're just like, putting on airs. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
So I could see why this would drive him crazy. It drives me crazy. And sometimes it's just freaking work. And I have enough, you know, for me, it's like I have enough relationships in my life right now to manage. Adding a bunch more is not helping me. And if you start doing that kind of chronically, well, then you're not learning. You're not learning how to accept new people. You're not seeing new points of view. You're like, you're going to, you know, sort of just put yourself in a corner.
Or make a game of it, right? So Adam and I do this thing wherever we go, if one of us knows someone else there, like if it's a big crowd or a concert or something, it's like we win. And of course, you have to buy the other one ice cream, which is so dumb because we share money. But whatever. It's sort of this like, it's not like to handle the crowd or anything. It's more of like this just interesting game. So think of a game at a neighborhood barbecue. All right. How many people can you catch lying? Or how many people can you get to talk about, some, like get them to say some code word or
like
whatever.
Steer them into a conversation and, right.
Right. And then pick a category of like how many did it. And for me, I always win at that game if it's like get them to say something they've never told anyone else.
Wow. This is what psychology majors do for fun, everyone.
Yeah, no, we don't really. And that, you know, actually everyone asks, do you just analyze people all day? And the truth is, I don't. Mm. I don't do it because I'm not going to do it for free.
Right,
like
right.
I have to remind myself, like, listen, no one is asking you nor paying you or wanting you to do that. So don't. Yeah. And it's taken years. And I think the difference obviously is the safety factor. He has adrenaline on his side or against him, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't have adrenaline. I'm geeking out because I'm like, oh, I'm hearing this thing and I know how to help you.
Yeah.
And
I've seen your eyes before, like in certain situations where someone will say something and I'll look at Wendy and I can see something in there though. Like where you'll go, oh, like more than anyone else at the table.
Problem.
Yeah. You'll say that's a problem or that's a good thing or that's a whatever. And you can just see it in your face, but then you don't say anything. And it's kind of always been a bit of a crack up to me, but.
Right. And you know, he probably has that same experience, but he has decided behaviorally to like just extricate himself from the social circle. And that's hard for his wife, right? She's like, okay, don't be so dang weird. And the reality is, he is not alone. This is a very common experience, especially for sheepdogs.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got to find some balance and then find what nurtures him or makes him feel sort of safe, right? Like, so maybe just a few people fishing that he really trusts or something. Do that. Put your energy in that. And then when you have to go to the neighborhood barbecue that you don't want to, make a game of it or treat yourself afterwards or get through it, whatever. But, you know, and the other thing, the whole back to the door, that is not paranoia. If he said, hi, I'm a librarian and I always have to have my back to facing or whatever, be like, okay, maybe that's paranoia. But a cop, absolutely. That's what they all do. That's normal.
That's okay.
So next time everyone goes in a restaurant, look at everyone who's facing the door and wink at them like, I know.
They'll suddenly
Give
be glad.
Give them the old point and wink like, yeah.
As soon as you walk in. And all you're going to do is make them more like, oh, I'm always going to sit
this
here.
This is why I always face the doors, because people like that.
Did you see that weirdo?
Yeah, freaky person.
Yeah, no doubt.
Exactly. I have a friend who has ADD really bad. And so he always sits with his back to the door because it distracts him.
Mm.
So everyone facing the other way, all has ADD. Everyone facing the door is a sheepdog. How about that?
I sometimes not look at the door. I feel like maybe on purpose, because there's something about resigning yourself to the chaos of it. In other words, I've had this feeling before. I'm like, well, I'm not seeing this one door, this one exit. I'm not facing it. Come whatever's going to come. Let's just do this. Like
you
it's
give
almost,
up and you're ready to die.
Yeah, it's like a different kind of paranoia. Like I know the zombie's going to rush through there and that I'm the first in the way, but what are you going to do? Got to eat this burger.
Well, in every TV show you've ever watched, every movie, we know who's the first one who's dead.
Yeah.
We don't know their last name. We know where they're sitting in the room. Yeah,
yeah, you can always tell. Yeah, it's true. And he's usually black, but let's not, we don't want to go down that road.
Can I say one thing about race real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Sure.
Some interesting things about those, a lot of those deaths that have been related to the person arrested in the back seat complaining about a health condition, like my heart hurts or I can't breathe or those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a bunch of interviews with various police departments sort of around the country that were talking about how common that is to hear. And so they don't give it any credence, right? So as a lay person watching that video, you're going, oh my gosh, the guy is telling you he's dying. Well, everyone they arrested for the last 2 weeks has said the same thing in the back of a car.
Yeah. And then
so
compound
we see
those
them
weeks
as heartless.
For, yeah. You compound those weeks into years and their whole entire police career, they've heard people complain in the back seat of some fake ailment or whatever.
But let's not excuse the one who does the illegal chokehold and then, you know, kill the
guy. This is not
cigarettes.
The same deal. Yeah.
Not the same. But, you know, it leads to this sort of hardening that often happens, and you know, that guy's kind of experiencing that a little bit. And maybe one last thing is when he's doing these social interactions that don't matter, maybe there's a way to keep connected to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about when most people go to a party, well, okay, here's the secret sauce, everyone go to a party, everyone thinks everyone's looking at them, and everyone doesn't want to sound stupid. And everyone wants to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
So it's so easy. You just walk up to someone and get them to talk about themselves, and everyone wins. So maybe he could just be interested in humanity a little. Like, what do people think? What do they say? What do the sheepdog do at a party? As opposed to waiting for it to be about him, something it's either helping him or not helping him. Just find it interesting. But then make sure you fish with some friends that you like.
Real quick.
You know what I'm saying?
Has the Pixar movie Inside Out made its way to Sweden yet?
No, but I've heard all about it, and I'm sure it's coming.
You absolutely need to see it.
I know. I hear it's fabulous.
It's basically a metaphor for behavioral science. It's really, really great. And
so cool. I can't wait to see it.
It's smart and, like, not, yes, delightful for children, for sure. But it's that thing is written for smart adults who get the nuances of, like, behavior and growth and change. And it's just fantastic. You'll love it.
And I haven't seen it, obviously, but the having all these different voices play the different emotions is genius, because that's how it actually starts.
Kind of goes that way, right? In a lot of ways, they're real voices. And then those, not to give anything away, because the real crux of the story is about these emotions in a very real way, but there's a point in that thing where it just resonated. It was like, oh my gosh, these guys are geniuses. I don't know who they hired to consult on this, but freaking, it's amazing. So yeah, hurry up, Sweden. What's the slack off, Sweden?
I'm sure I could download it illegally. That's always an option, but we're just trying to keep our nose clean, you know.
That's right. Living Americans while in Sweden. that's it. Wendy, good job as always. Do you have any causes, anything to pimp?
Oh, I will. But right now, I'm just pimping the 4th of July. That's in like 2 days, everyone.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be in Göteborg, Sweden, come to a party where it's everyone's American. And, well, okay, it's mostly like Americans married to Swedes, so it's probably half and half still. But
yeah.
And we are literally just trying to come up with something that seems American. They're like, bring American food. I'm like, what should I bring?
Smash.
So what?
Some,
I need advice. What's the most American
deep fried food?
Yeah, that's right. Deep fry everything would be fine.
Oh, I could deep fry like a turkey.
Yeah, you totally could.
There was a woman we ran into in Japan who was managing a marathon run up to the top of Tokyo Tower, this super tall tower. And,
and
she says, oh, where are you guys from? And we say America. She's like, oh, America. What are they known for?
What?
And I'm thinking to myself, how do you not know what we're known for, first of all? But the only thing I could come up with was Statue of Liberty. But after we left her, we were thinking of all these great things we could have said, like, oh, you know, deep fried food and Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, exactly. The real important things we're proud of.
And did you say Makedon Danido? Because that's McDonald's in Japanese.
Oh, no, I did not say that.
Oh, that's cool.
That's like the main thing.
Yeah.
Hamburgers,
you're supposed to not leave. You're not supposed to leave the States unless you know that, Brian. Jeez.
I know. We passed a couple of those. They had some weird burgers that I was kind of tempted to try.
Weird burgers.
Like teriyaki sauce or something.
Yes.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something to that effect. Oh, so I was going to say do fireworks, but you have to stay up until midnight for it to be dark enough to see them.
Oh, yeah. That's so true.
That sucks.
But you just wait. This is why they do them on New Year's Eve, because it's dark by 3. You can just let them off at 4.
Go all night. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, may all your meatballs be Swedish, and let's do this again next week. It's Wendy Dunford on Pictionary, on Instagram, everybody. Bye now.
You can find her on Pictionary as well, probably.
Probably could.
Okay. Good times.
That's really funny.
Brian, we're done. Real quick, I was asked by David Michael to mention something. The shirts on the site for Nerdtacular, you can pick them up. If you're coming to Nerdtacular and you were going to plan on buying a shirt anyway, If you pre-order them now on the website over at frogpants.com/store, you can use this pickup code, which means you just get them in the size you wanted waiting at the event. And the code is N15PICKUP. That's N15PICKUP, all one word, and it's up there on the store right now. So frogpants.com/store. Is Carrie around? I guess she is.
She is, yeah. She's in the chat room. Let's
get her in here.
She's available for tallywhacking.
Sounds all right to me. Let's see. Carrie Chai. There she is. Oh, yeah. Bringing her in, doing our thing. I don't really have a theme. It'd be fun if I did.
That works. That one's good.
How about this one? I got one for you. How about this theme right here?
Baby like water.
All right.
What the hell?
I don't know what that is.
That's your new theme, Carrie. Hope you enjoy
That's exciting. Enjoy
it.
I like that.
Carrie, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. How are two of my favorite gentlemen today?
Oh, we're fine. That's a very nice thing for you to say. You're my favorite person, especially a person who comes on the show and talks about a cool bunch of crap we said during the week. And it's been an interesting week, I think. A lot of funny things were said. So to find out what was the funniest is really my greatest hope. So tell us, Carrie, how did it go?
Whew, long-winded. Okay, let's see. Top Gun 2 alternate titles. My favorite of those was Age of Trollbot said Top Gun 2, The Goose is Loose.
Nice.
It's a zombie-themed horror movie. Uh-huh. I thought that was a pretty good one.
The Goose is Loose.
The Goose is Loose, starring Val Kilmer as the USS Missouri.
Wow. That's pretty fantastic. Nice. Yeah.
Yep. We asked who was on the Axis of Fat. Val Kilmer, of course, came up, and so did Leo Laporte, which I thought was nice.
Oh, lovely.
And let's see what else we got here. Let's see. What is the new danger zone, given the age of all of the stars of the new movie? Scientology headquarters was one of the new danger zones. And the winner for the week, I'll get to another one in a minute, but the winner for the week, the new danger zone, given the age of the stars, is stairs.
Nice.
Pretty good.
That's not bad. Oh, by the way, I found out Tom Skerritt was the same age that Tom Cruise is now when they made the first Top Gun. Yeah, Tom Cruise is Tom Skerritt's age in the new one, which is super. It's like Star Wars. It's like Mark Hamill is the age of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right, Val Guinness. Oh yeah, no kidding.
Weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yes, the new danger zone being stairs, by the way, is our very own B4 Tank Girl. Good job, Trish.
Done. Way to go, Trish. Yes. Nicely done. Yes.
Brian Ibbotson.
And others I have here. We have to talk about the farting insect.
Oh, good.
I said, it's a thing. I said, should the U.S. Armed Forces decide to get on board with this new brand of chemical warfare, what should they name the new strike force and what's their main weapon? Okay. And one of the guys said, it's called Rolling Thunder, and the weapon is silent but deadly. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Another one, because you got to get Thorin in there at some point during the week, because he's just a funny bastard. So we talked about AKB48 being a J-pop band that Brian was introduced to, and much like Menudo, the members are replaced occasionally. If the U.S. was to take that cue and create a similar pop group, what would it be named? Mm-hmm. And Thorin did not disappoint. Now you have to, this is a visual one, so write it down. ID10T.
IZ1, idiot.
Yeah.
Nice. Well done,
Thorin. Well done, guys. Yeah, good job this week.
Good week this week, man. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. I've scared a child into a bunch of sprinklers, and you have come and done what you've done, which is fantastic.
Well, yeah, I try.
Carrie, I hope you have a great week. And
I will try, guys.
Let's do this again next week, all right?
Sounds good. I'll see you then.
Bye now. Okay.
See you.
All right. Off she goes. Brian, we're done. This is a show. We'll be back later tonight. Thanks to patreon.com/TMS. By the way, if you're concerned about some of the weirdness going on with Patreon yesterday, it was just a processing bunch of errors, and they fixed that apparently. So everything should be working now. If you had any questions on that, just let us know, but all should be well. Go to patreon.com/TMS to support us and keep the fifth show week alive, plus other cool unlocks.
Keep us alive, really,
quite literally. And tonight we'll be back on at 4:30 p.m. Mountain Time, so be here for that. Frogpants.com/TMS is our website. TheMorningStream@gmail.com is our email address. Leave voicemails at 801-471-0462. We're on Twitter at Coverville, at Scott Johnson, at Morning Stream. Yes. And new instance tomorrow. No current geek for the holiday. New
but
boop
I will
show.
Do a Coverville. I wasn't able to do it yesterday because of the old iTunes fiasco.
Well, so. Yeah, you have a lot of songs, dude.
It took a while for it to upload to iTunes Match, which I'm sure it failed anyway because I've got more than the 25,000. I wanted to say, no, don't do it. Don't bother. You're going to just yell at me.
Yeah, that's all good. So today, that'll be a thing you do.
Yes.
And then there's a new hypo help up. Hypothetical help went up yesterday. Yay. Terpster and I talking about name changes, which is an interesting topic. So check that out at hypotheticalhelp.com. All right. I think that's it. Let's do music.
All right. This one comes from Sean. Says, hello, Sith and Bede. On July 6th, my family and I are flying to Orlando, Florida to take our first adventure in Disney World. My kids, two boys, Connor, age 9, Liam, age 11, have never flown and none of us have been to Disney before. And it's July in America's Wang, so we're all very excited. I don't know of any songs that fit the bill, but I trust you, Brian, to be able to find something that works. Love the show, though. Sean from Not Tran or Pennsylvania, Ohio.
Nice.
I don't know what that means, but sounds good. Well, something Disney, sure. Just kind of keeping with our theme earlier today. As a matter of fact, keeping not just with the Disney theme, but even keeping with the Little Mermaid theme. How about a cover of Under the Sea? This one performed by Jonathan Young from his album from last year called Young Does Disney. It's a cover of Under the Sea featuring Travis Cart.
Sounds good to me. We'll be back tonight. See you guys then. Stay out of trouble. Kiss your moms. Bye. Ba-da-da-ba.
Always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going out there, but that is a big mistake. I just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. There's wonderful things around you, and what more is you're looking for? Under the sea, yeah, under the sea, yeah. Darling, it's bitter, down when it's winter, take it from me. Up on the shore, it will go day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we devoting full time to floating under the sea. Down here, all the fish is happy as off through the waves they roll. The fish on the land ain't happy, they're sad cause they in the bowl. But fish in the bowl is lucky, they in for a worse fate. One day when the boss get hungry, guess who gon' be on the plate? Oh no, under the sea, yeah, under the sea, yeah. Nobody beat us, fry us and eat us in fricassee. The land folks loves to cook. Under the sea, we off the hook. We got no troubles, life is the bubbles. Under the sea, oh, under the sea, yeah. Since life is sweet here, we got to be here naturally. Even the sturgeon and the ray, they get the urge to start to play. We got the spirit, you got to hear it. Under the sea, oh.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
If I'd have stopped there, I would have missed my destiny. What?